My guest at the big table tonight, the CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. They just put out a first-of-its-kind study that looks at food insecurity when it comes to the disabled. It turns out when disabled, finding your next meal is not easy. As a matter of fact, the numbers are a bit staggering. The study finds that for families who care for an adult with a disability, 31% of them are food insecure. What's that mean? Well, it means that they don't know where their next meal is coming from. That's a startling number because with budget cuts and stalemates, these people and their families are in dire need of help. And the question is, where do they get it? A lot of times they get it from food pantries or the Greater Chicago Food Depository. Through the pantries or their summer meals program, the depository is making sure a large population of our surrounding area is not starving, but also eating healthier. In studio tonight to talk about food secure insecurity, funding, and the future of hunger is CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository, Kate Mayer. Kate, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk about the study. What's the impetus for this study? Because it's so specific and it's something I wouldn't think you would normally go after.
Well, you know, the idea for the study came actually a couple of years ago. There was a national study that came out from the United States Department of Agriculture that looked nationally at food insecurity among people with disabilities. And we were really struck at the time because anecdotally, we saw a lot of individuals when we went to visit food pantries, when we saw people struggling with getting access to food, we saw a lot of people who were also living with disabilities. And it has, upon reflection, we realized that this was something that we just didn't know very much about. And as you said, the results are staggering. What we learned in this study is that people who are living with disabilities have a disproportionately much higher likelihood that they will also struggle with hunger. The other thing that was really important for us, I think, as an organization that is on the front lines of responding to hunger every day, we do a really good job of counting the people who are walking into food pantries every day.
Yeah, right.
So we know a lot about the population of people who already turns to us. What this study helped us understand is that there are a lot of people that we don't even reach. People who are struggling with food access, but because of their disability, because they are in a wheelchair or because they have a physical disability that makes it difficult for them to go to a food pantry, we're not even contacting these people, which suggests that there is a lot more work that we need to do in order to meet our daily mission of providing food to hungry people here.
I was going to say that's a really strong point that, you know, when you look past the idea of who you know and who comes to get help. And that can be the epicenter of how you can break down data and understand who's coming. But when you realize that there's a major population of people who aren't coming to the food pantry, who aren't coming to the food banks of Chicago, that's a concern.
Well, and it's a sobering moment because I will tell you, even before we released the study, we were doing a booming business. Despite the fact that times have gotten better for a lot of people, and we certainly see economic indicators that would suggest that we are rebounding from where we were as a state, as a country, 5 years ago. Nevertheless, food pantries here in Cook County, and frankly, all across the country, are still doing a booming business. And even as we reflect on the fact that we're seeing so many people showing up at food pantries, the knowledge that there are even more people who need food who aren't able to access food pantries, it's sobering and it underscores the challenge that we have, not just as a food bank, but frankly, as a society, our most vulnerable neighbors are struggling mightily.
A lot of it, as you mentioned, was about transportation, the idea of getting to food pantries or stores, other places. But the other part of the study was about, you know, food that is because of whatever the disability might be, the medication or what have you, like that they're just not able to eat certain foods or otherwise. And the other is, you know, what is available to them might be unhealthy options. And we're going to talk about this tonight. Because that doesn't just affect the disabled, it affects kids, it affects other low-income communities where the food that's available in the corner store is a bag of Cheetos or something that isn't necessarily going to sustain and continues to possibly even, you know, hurt the people that you know are in the position of being food insecure.
That's right. We heard a lot of stories about this intersection between food access and health, which is really important. We can talk more about that. But there were also things like, I mean, I remember the very first food pantry in Chicago that I ever visited more than 20 years ago. And to get into that food pantry, you had to go down a long flight of stairs into the basement of that church. If you use a walker or have a cane or have some sort of limited mobility, that maybe the difference between being able to get food or not. And so we have to reflect on what that means. This charitable food distribution system, there are a lot of church basements.
That's a good point,
with stairs.
Yeah. Right. What do you do? I mean, that's just one thing to have the study, but it's another to say, okay, now that you've identified that there are a lot of people underserved or not being served at all, what's the next step?
Well, part of it is convening the conversation. And so when we released the study, we intentionally released it in partnership with Access, which is an organization that's really focused on the rights and the lives of people who live with disabilities. Because we know that we can't do this alone. We need to do this in partnership. We need to do this in partnership with organizations that really understand the challenges. Part of the response is from funding and capacity building and thinking about how we can invest in community-based organizations and help them be better positioned to serve. Part of it is an advocacy solution. I mean, we talked about the barrier of stairs. Another barrier, frankly, is that there are many people who rely on the services that they receive through social service organizations, home health care aides that help individuals with disabilities literally consume food. And those services have been deeply affected.
Yeah. You see that not only in the proposed cuts at the federal level, but we just saw with the stalemate here
in
the state. Kate Mayer is my guest. She's the CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. We're talking about food insecurity, and we'll talk about the state of hunger in our area coming up. But I'm fascinated by what you mentioned, the idea of access and health. And we'll talk about that more coming up here. Kate Mayer is my guest at the Big Table. Stay with us. My guest tonight at the Big Table, Kate Mayer. She's the CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. We're talking about food insecurity, access to food, health. There's a lot of, I mean, I think about all these topics and they all seem to swirl around what constantly is in the news, whether it's we heard about social service agencies with the budget in the state of Illinois or the House budget and the proposed president's budget. Also, it's starting to take a swipe at some of these things, but also, you know, just thinking about in Cook County alone, the sugary drink tax and the President Preckwinkle, essentially talking about this as a fight against obesity. This is and I want to talk to you about food insecurity, because this is an area that we've heard so much in our society about hunger, right? We have seen the ads on TV and how to help and do all these things. But food insecurity, which seems to me to be a bigger issue, rarely gets talked about. What is food insecurity?
So I'm glad you asked, because I think that's part of the challenge that we have. And, I'm mindful of the fact that on what is probably the most beautiful day of the year in what's, you know, the most beautiful city in the world, it's kind of hard to wrap your arms or your mind around the fact that there might be people who are struggling. And food insecurity is a technical term that means that you don't have certainty about where your next meal is going to come from. Maybe you are a parent and you don't have enough money in your bank account to go to the grocery store, or you're a child and you live in a house where there is no food at home, and it's summer and so school is out and you're not getting your breakfast and lunch that you get during the school year. So there's uncertainty about where you're going to access food. It looks different. Hunger looks different in this country than it looks in other parts of the world. And I think that's part of the challenge sometimes. We understand that in third world countries that hunger is often accompanied with emaciation and distended bellies. And here, as you said, sometimes hunger takes on the appearance of somebody who also has diabetes or has obesity. And it's hard to think about how can somebody be hungry and also be obese. And what that really gets down to is the fact that oftentimes the calories that are available, the cheap calories, are the calories that are not as good for our bodies.
Right. So, and we've heard this over and over, terms like food deserts and you know, taking options for produce and things and turning them into the corner store or the liquor store to be able to get chips and sodas and things of that nature.
That's right.
But, I mean, I'm fascinated by the way that we rarely talk about it. You know, it almost becomes less like it's not an issue that we're struggling with as a country. Do you recognize? I mean, it seems because every time I do the story and I talk about food insecurity, I'll say 1 in 7 kids, and I don't know if that's the right number. Now, 1 in 7 kids don't know where their next meal is coming from, or 1 in 5 this summer, right? And it blows my mind. Like right when I say those words, I say, "How can that be?" And I don't know if I feel like if the whole country sort of understood that number and really came together, that would be it would just be unacceptable.
You're right. And it is that sobering of a number. It's 1 in 5. There are neighborhoods in this city, in this county, where it's actually worse than that. We have neighborhoods that it's 1 in 2. Children who don't have the food that they need for that day, that the food that they need to be healthy, the food that will make it possible for them to be great students at school, to grow up and to be great neighbors for generations to come. And that's, you know, I think, frankly, part of the challenge is that hunger in America is not the symptom of disease or famine or warfare. Hunger in America is a symptom of poverty. It's not about the fact that a plague of bugs came and destroyed crops. We actually grow so much more food in this country. We produce so much more food in this country than we actually need in order to be able to ensure that everyone has the access to live healthy lives. It's that we have a staggering problem of poverty in America. And that's not something that we're very comfortable talking about.
The governments, the municipalities, whether it be the Cook County government or the city of Chicago or even the United States government, recognize it to an extent in the way that they create SNAP and other opportunities to give people in poverty a chance to have access to food. Is the programs that I mentioned, and SNAP and Department of Agriculture, or you know, even what we do here with the food banks and others in Chicago, are the governments doing the job? Are they being successful at least trying to create safety nets for people who don't know where their next meal is coming from?
So let me talk about SNAP for a minute, because I think it surprises people, because I think it's been popular in the last couple of years to beat up on the SNAP program.
This would be food stamps.
That's right. So SNAP is the official name. It stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's the official name for the program that a lot of us still think of as the food stamp program. And the truth of the matter is, it is one of the most efficient and effective government programs, not just government safety net programs, but any government programs. And the program has done exactly what it was designed to do, which actually is something I think we should all feel really proud of, to have a government program that did exactly what it was designed to do. It expanded at a time that there was great need and people were struggling, and it caught them as they were falling. And then it catapulted those individuals back into their lives. It provided a safety net. It made sure that people were able to access food. The way SNAP works, you have to be qualified. So based on your income, somebody looks at that and makes sure that you qualify for the program. And then once you do qualify, you get benefits every month that you can spend in a retail grocery store in your neighborhood. You can only use those benefits for food. And it ensures that you can get those basic, that basic necessity that you need in order to live a healthy life. So it's a great program. The challenge is that there are very real threats to this program, despite the fact that we still have more than 40 million Americans who are struggling with access to food. There are proposals right now being floated in Washington, D.C., to significantly cut this program.
Why did he do that? I mean, is it? I mean, I know politics plays a role because it seems more often than not that there seems to be it gets sort of the stereotype of a handout. We see that we see the fight over Medicaid as it's happening right now with the healthcare debate. But why if the program is so successful and efficient, why would there be choice? Is it just the idea of trying to minimize government spending?
I think that's exactly right. I think the program is big. The reason the program is big is because there are a lot of people who qualify. They qualify because they do not make very much money. We have a lot of people who are struggling in this country. And so we have to ask ourselves, yeah, if there are so many people who qualify, why is that? I would also say that I think that there are a lot of people who are willing to throw out this program or propose cuts to this program because they don't know very much about it. And whenever I have the opportunity to sit down with policymakers, with elected officials, I had a chance to sit down a couple of years ago with the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. And at the end of our conversation, after he had had the opportunity to talk with a woman who had benefited from the SNAP program, he shared that he was stunned. He hadn't heard a story like hers before. And so I think we have to continue to disabuse people of some of the myths that are out there.
Kate Maris, my guest, the CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. She's my guest at the big table tonight. We'll continue that conversation. We'll take a break. We'll get an update with the news, and we'll continue here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Domati. It's Justin. Download, 720 WGN. In studio with me at the big table tonight, CEO Kate Maris. She's the CEO of the Greater Chicago and Chicagoland Food Depository. We're talking about food insecurity. We're talking about the study that came out a little bit earlier about how it affects, how food insecurity affects the disabled. And we also want to talk about the 1 in 5 kids in the Cook County area that are food insecure, that don't know where their next meal is coming from this summer. I mean, it's something we never think about. Yeah. The school lunch program has been a successful program in the way that we saw just in recent times that government said, we're not even going to take a quarter. We're just going to offer this for free. Talk about how we have moved as a society. I mean, you know, as we move towards, you know, recognizing more and more of the inequality in our society.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. One of the things that I love to reflect on is that the history of some of these government programs that feed children. And it surprises people when they hear that the school lunch program actually was born out of an effort by the then Republican-led Congress in the 1940s to ensure that our nation's defense would be strong. We had just come out of World War II, and there was a recognition that there were a lot of children who were struggling with access to food, and if you don't have access to food, you're not going to be healthy. And so it was this idea of making sure that all children have access to food was really born out of that idea. Today, as a parent, I know that when it is time for standardized tests to happen in my children's school, there's always a note that comes home that talks about the fact that we need to make sure that our kids have a healthy breakfast that morning, and we need to make sure that we pack snacks for our kids that day. And so if we think about that for a minute, if it's important enough to have a healthy breakfast and a healthy snack on the day that you're taking a test, my goodness, isn't it important enough then that a child has healthy breakfast and healthy lunch
every day
in school? Absolutely.
So as we see in the Chicago Public Schools does this and others, and you see CPS is a good example of kind of caught in the crosshairs of political argument. And we've kind of in this big table combo, we talked about the realities, the stereotypes, the narratives, and the politics when it comes to poverty. Not just food, but again, we see that Chicago Public Schools is serving a low-income community, a place where kids can get food, and there's a direct correlation to the idea that in the summertime in Chicago or in Cook County, 1 in 5 kids are not getting fed.
Yeah.
I mean, and as you said, some communities, 1 in 2. So, I mean, do we need to do a better job as a society of recognizing that, of telling that story, of changing the narrative? Where are we when it comes to having a voice in the political landscape when it comes to budgets and social services and safety nets and all the things that we've been reading about in the last 3 years?
Well, here, I think we just have to bear witness to the fact that we have a staggering number of our most vulnerable neighbors, children, people with disabilities, as the study revealed, older adults, people who are amazing individuals but who struggle every day, who don't have access to food, who are living in communities that are affected by violence. And we need to talk about that, and we need to put a face on it, and we need to constantly let policymakers and elected officials understand what it means, not just today, but my goodness, when we are talking about 1 in 5 children struggling with access to food, what that means for the next generation. Because while there is lots of information in the medical sciences that is contradictory, one thing is very clear. Children who do not have access to an adequate, healthy diet, they will not do as well in school. They will not graduate at as high of a rate. They are more likely to live a life in poverty. They are more likely to be affected by a host of serious diseases.
We like to take on the big picture, you know, big ticket items here. And I guess I ask the question, since you're a thought leader in this area, when we talk about the idea of reform, why not reform the system to recognize that? I mean, what's stopping us from saying, okay, you know what, SNAP has been beneficial, but it seems to me that maybe we take a look at food security and hunger as more of an entitlement program, more like Social Security, where you take money out of a check or you do something that's giving back to the – I know that – you know, I'm not trying to change the economic system of our country, but the idea of recognizing this to be a problem and recognizing that having an unhealthy environment or a food insecure environment leads to other problems that also will – you know, compound as you get older. I mean, it seems to me like we should be having a conversation about changing the way we even look at hunger.
You know, I think you are absolutely right that we have to think about this in a larger context. And, you know, number one, hunger is a symptom of poverty. And we have to talk about that. We have to talk about the fact that increasingly the story of being hungry in this community, and this is true across the country, it's also a story of having a job. It's a story of doing everything right. We see with every passing year more people who are turning to food pantries who have not just one job, but multiple jobs. And you know, I in all due respect, I think there's something wrong when you are doing everything in your power and you are working multiple jobs and you still don't have enough money to put food on your table. That's something that we have to ask ourselves about. But I would also say that this notion that hunger is part of, you know, we can't just think about hunger. We need to think about an entire food system. We need to think about the food that we all eat. When we think about health and we think about this, then this came up in the disability study. When we think about some of the diseases that people are struggling with, diabetes, hypertension, chronic obesity, these are diseases that can be managed by access to quality food. And believe you me, it is so much less expensive to make sure that people have access to that food than right. It is to pay for the consequences of the disease. And so I think we have to challenge ourselves to make those investments up front. It's not only the right and the humane thing to do, it frankly is the thing that makes business sense to do.
A lot has been made of shrinking government, and we even talked about just the idea of wanting to budget cuts when it comes to SNAP or to other programs that are going to help people of low income and in poverty. What can the private sector do? If the government is sending a message that it's, first of all, the federal government is sending a message, and I'm hearing it loud and clear, it's your problem, state. And the state government, as we know here in the state of Illinois, is not necessarily capable of being able to fund or have the kind of thought the kind of conversation that we need that we're having tonight, because they're entrenched. So what, I mean, do you turn to the private sector? Does it become the Greater Chicago Food Depository and others? It's your responsibility to help the hungry?
So I would say that it already is today a private public response. And I actually think that's one of the real strengths of this, is that this is not just that we are asking government to play a role. Government plays a critical role, and government needs to continue to play that critical role. But private industry has a role. Individuals volunteering, putting cans of food in food drive barrels, coming down and being a part of a charitable response, that's critical too. We need it all. And I think one of the most important things is building awareness. As I said earlier, we are sitting, I think there is no place more beautiful than the city of Chicago, particularly on a gorgeous summer day. It is hard to imagine on a day when most of us just want to go and walk along the lakefront or eat a hot dog or watch a baseball game. It's hard to imagine that so many of our neighbors are struggling. We have to tell that story and build awareness, and also build a sense of absolute outrage. That is not justice.
Okay, so I think about the ecosystem. We kind of talked about this a little bit, and we talked about the idea of having limited access or no access to food, to quality food. Having that replaced with a cheaper alternative, which is going to be the stuff at the liquor store on the corner, or just the processed food that we know to be the cheap alternative, even if it's in the grocery store. We then find ourselves having health problems as we get older, and we find ourselves in many cases having to get government subsidies and help to deal with the injuries and disease and other things that came on from this nasty cycle, right? So I think about what's happening in Cook County, where President Preckwinkle wants to put a tax on sugary drinks. And she has made it very clear that this is a revenue issue. She probably botched a little bit of the delivery of this, but has said that this is really also a health epidemic in the county. We have to deal with this. But does it not recognize the cycle in which I just pointed out, the idea that yes, if you put a tax and you say, don't buy this, you're also in a position where people don't have any other alternatives. They're drinking sugary drinks because it's cheap, because it's what's available. It's 79 cents for a 3 liter of pop. You know what I mean? You get to a certain point where you're like, unless we look at the root cause of poverty and what's being given to us in subsidy or what have you, those are the only opportunities, and the government is going in trying to eliminate those.
So one of the things that this is sort of under the radar, a lot of people's radar, but it's actually something that I think is really inspiring and exciting, and that is in Cook County right now, there is actually a food access task force that President Preckwinkle established about a year and a half ago. And it is an effort that has brought a lot of people together to have conversations about exactly what you're talking about. How do we ensure that everybody who lives in this county, people who live in the city as well as the suburban communities within Cook County, have access to the quality food that they need to live healthy lives? How do we make sure that programs like SNAP are reaching people, school breakfast, summer feeding programs? This has been a great effort, and it involves a lot of people. And to your earlier point, it brings together people who are servants in government as well as individuals in nonprofit organizations. There are some corporate partners who are at the table. So it's a great, robust conversation. And I frankly think we need more of those. We have a similar effort at the state level to try to bring people together around an Illinois commission to end hunger. So I think we need conversations that bring people to a table to understand that it's in the best interest of everybody in a community when people have access to healthy, nutritious food.
All right, my last question. You mentioned 5 years ago, you've seen people rebound from 5 years ago. You mentioned even, when going back 20 years in your experience of being in this business and the idea of trying to deal with food insecurity and poverty. Are we at a better place in 2017 than we ever have? I mean, are we progressing towards the goal of ending hunger and ending food insecurity, or are we not?
You know, that is a really hard question, because I am I think of myself as about the most optimistic person out there. But this is a difficult moment in time. And I worry a lot about what's in front of us, because the people in our city, in our county, in our state, in our country, who are the most vulnerable, are falling into deeper need. And it becomes harder and harder to catch them as they're falling when we are dismantling the very programs that have demonstrated themselves to be effective at catching them.
Without an alternative.
That's right. And I think we have to make a decision about what kind of community, what kind of state, what kind of country we are going to be. From my perspective, this is a human rights issue. When we have neighbors who are struggling with something as basic as having food to eat, that's on all of us.
Kate Mayer is the CEO of Greater Chicago Food Depository. I can't thank you enough for coming in tonight, being my guest at the big table. Thanks, Kate. Appreciate it.
Thank you.